Welcome to The Wolf Whistle, the podcast that interviews and celebrates the former players of our great club, Wolverhampton Wanderers. Welcome to The Wolf Whistle.
Welcome to the next edition in a special series of Wolf Whistle podcasts where we speak to former players about their best 11 from their time at the club. We're lucky to be joined by another striker today, John Purdy, a striker in the late 80s for the Wolves. John, welcome and how are you?
Hello. Good morning. All good. Getting on with things under the circumstances, yeah.
Good. Right, John. So I also sent you the task of picking your best 11 for the Wolves. So which formation are you going for?
Well, playing in the mid-80s, it's got to be a 4-4-2. There wasn't any other one.
I don't think there was, because every player I've interviewed only does a 4-4-2. What about 4-3-3? Not interested, John?
That was my favourite sort of formation, but back in those days it was 4-4-2 or 4-4.
Oh, what, sorry?
What did you say,
John? It was a 4-4-2 or a
4-4-2, as Mike Bassett would say.
Oh, got ya. Sorry, I thought I'd missed something then. So, your best 11, John, who are you going for in between the sticks?
Well, now this was quite tough, because if you consider that the goalkeepers that were there when I joined Wolves were Tim Flowers, Scott Barrett, Tim being the tightest man I've ever met in my life, and Scott being one of the funniest, and then Vince Bartram also was there, and also Big Eric Nixon, who went on to play for Man City. He came on loan for a short term. Do you want any stories about them?
Yeah, far away.
Okay, well, with Tim, I used to lodge with Tim in Codsall with Jack and Olive, who were sort of well known, used to bring the tea and biscuits to training. Jack and Olive followed us everywhere, lovely people. We both shared together in their house. We used to go out for a pint during pre-season. Now, I'd always get the first pint, he'd get the second, I'd get the third, and then he'd have no money, because he used to budget himself for £5 a day. So he couldn't get the fourth pint in. So needless to say, I found another drinking partner very, very quickly.
To be honest, if he's budgeting £5 a day, he'll be fine during the lockdown then, all that training. So he'll be all right, won't he?
Oh, he'll be happy now, yeah. He won't have to spend any money.
Brilliant. So, out of those keepers, who would be your who'd be the one you choose? You know, you'd think it'd be safest in goal for you?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, the goalie I'm actually going to go for is none of them. Mark Kendall's the one I would choose in goals over all of them. You know, Kendo was a great character and a great goalkeeper. You know, God rest him. But and some funny things about him as well that, you know, I can't really say too much. But, you know, the other ones, I had Vince Bartram stay with me one night, and he was sick everywhere after trying to drink with me. And he was only about 18 at the time, I think. And then Big Eric Nixon stayed with me as well, because I had an apartment on the Compton Road, and the club couldn't really afford to put people up at the time. So I got a spare room, so I offered to put the lads up if needed. And they were sort of happy to take me up on it. So Big Eric came from Man City on loan, and he kind of filled the doorway when he walked in. He was huge, Eric. Nice fella, and a very good goalkeeper. Went on to have a good career, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, fantastic. And obviously, before Mark Kendall came to Wolves, he was at Spurs. The only worrying thing is here, John, the common denominator, all these players stopping with you, ending up being sick through alcohol. I think you was the denominator here, John.
Well, you say that, but I was actually home before Vince, but we can't really go into what went on. I think he's married now, so...
So, number two, right back. Number two. So, we've got Mark Kendall in goal, moving swiftly on. Number two at right back is...
Right, are we allowed Wolves All-Stars in this?
Well, look, preferably players you played within the first team at Wolves.
Okay, well,
unless,
in that case...
Unless, obviously, you're picking me from the All-Stars, but... yeah, but players you played with for Wolves.
You're on the bench, Jace.
Oh, great.
We have a lot, you know. Exactly. Well, I'd go for Andy Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
And definitely Tomo being Mr. Reliable. You know, 7 out of 10. He did feature in one of my worst moments at Wolves when Graham Turner decided to, well, I went to see him because I wasn't getting picked, and he drew a line across the blackboard in his office and said, "See that line? That's Andy Thompson, 7 out of 10. That's where I want everybody to play, so I know what I'm going to get from them." And he basically did a big sort of curve up, which was sort of 10 out of 10, and then a big curve, like a line down to the bottom, which was 1 out of 10. And he said, "You can be there or there, and I don't know where you're going to be, so you're not for me."
And then
I was like,
and then seconds later, he drew another line across the board and went, "By the way, John, you've just crossed that."
No, it had an arrow to the exit. So.
Oh, brilliant. So,
well, yeah, so Andy Thompson. Bearing in mind that I also played with Zico, didn't I? Jeff Palmer, he came back to Wolves when I was there. He was at the end of his sort of days, really. I think he'd admit that. But obviously a great stalwart and servant for Wolves.
I mean, I did ask Dean Edwards about that yesterday. Do you think that it was a mistake for Jeff to come back after being such a legend at the club, you know, winning the League Cup in 74 and 80? Do you think it was a bit of a mistake for Jeff to come back?
Well, he probably looked back and say yes, because it sort of tarnished his reputation a little bit. But I think everybody that remembers what he did for Wolves, he was...
Alright, are we still there?
Yeah,
John?
We hadn't got...
Sorry,
I'm still here, yeah.
Yeah, you broke up a little bit then. Sorry, go on.
It's because you've called me on bloody the internet, that's why.
I know. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, but he was just trying to help the club, and as I said, we were all trying to pull together, and whatever help we could get was sort of received at the time. So, you know, but he's still well involved with the club, and I think puts back a lot. And is well remembered, really.
Yeah.
Just on that, I played with Bobby Thompson as well for Wolves All Stars. I think he was 62 at the time when he played,
right.
And he was still never carried an ounce. Was immaculate, and was probably the best player on the pitch, you know, on the day. So that was an honour. Yeah. So
that's interesting.
You know, that part of things that you get from keeping involved with the club.
Yeah, of course. Because I know Bobby obviously managed the Wolves All Stars for a while as well. Number three, left back.
Right, left back. I would go for Digger Barnes, Dave Barnes,
yeah.
who was there when I came to the club. He used to pick me up for training and try and get me out of bed in the morning. Bless him. I'd say some funny stories about Digger, but I'm sure you've probably heard most of them.
Welcome to John Purdy's Funny East 11 stories.
Again, I played in Wolves All Stars with Derek Statham. He played as a guest for us once. For a charity thing, and that was a pleasure to play him in front of Derek.
Oh, I bet.
And you could still see the quality that he got even then. And Mark Venus also played with Vino, but it was early days when he came, and I think he went on to improve a lot.
Oh, he did. So why does Dave Barnes get the nod, John?
Digger got everything, really, as a left back. He got a sweet left foot. He could run all day. He was hard, tackled, good in the air. He got everything, Digger. He should never have been playing at our level, but his mental instability probably didn't help. Anyway.
He did. Flipping heck, he sounds like Dean Edwards. He said exactly the same.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Brilliant. So, centre-halves. Who is your centre-half pairing for your best Wolves 11?
Well, this is very easy because most of the time I was there, defence were crap. But the two standout centre-halves are Floyd Street, who has got something else that stands out magnificently. And
I can't edit this, John. I can't edit it.
Good. Ali Robertson. Ali was a lead. Ali, great bloke, still good friends now. And he was a proper leader, Ali, and hard as nails. He wouldn't last 5 minutes in the game today, but back then, if a ball got played up to a centre forward and he was behind them, he literally raked the back of their standing leg.
Yeah.
Just to test how, you know, tough they were, and they wanted to be in the game. So
I mean, to be honest, with Ali, I mean, obviously he come to Wolves and at a time, obviously, when we needed his experience, and he, you know, brought us up, and, you know, he's part of that team that brought us up, like yourself, played in the Sherpa van final as well. But, I mean, you know, we can choose to forget, but he played six or 700 games at West Brom. I mean, he was a ridiculously good player, wasn't he?
Yeah, again, Ali was consistent. You know, he went out there and he was like Jekyll and Hyde, really, off the pitch, lovely, amiable, funny. You know, I know you met him recently, didn't you? And he's just a very easy man to get on with, and me and him sort of hit it off.
Oh yeah, lovely
pretty straight away.
He said he's
but on the pitch, he kind of just went into this sort of win at all costs, which is what you should be. I mean, unfortunately, I couldn't do that, but that's what you should do. You should kind of change your personality to go out and play to the best of your ability and, you know, to win at all costs. And Ali had got that in him that he could kind of, you know, change his character completely.
I mean, just going back to that point very quickly, John, you just said you couldn't do that. I mean, people, the comments after we done your podcast, the comments on Twitter saying you are actually one of the most skillful players they've seen in a Wolves shirt. Didn't you have that other part to your game then, if you don't mind me asking?
No, I found later on in my career when it was kind of pretty much, you know, I'd accepted it wasn't going to happen for me, and I went and played at Kidderminster. Now, the manager there basically believed in me, loved me, and he backed me, had faith in me, and he actually promoted what I could do rather than focusing on what my weaknesses were.
That's a good point.
Which got the best out of me, whereas before that, especially in those 4-4-2 days, I don't mean to speak out of turn, but I was a number 10 before they existed. I needed to play in that little hole and be involved and involve other players, and it just didn't exist then, so I ended up getting played on the wing, and I really hadn't got the lungs or the energy to play in a 4-4-2 up and down and do all that sort of stuff. I know that myself, and I knew it then, really, but I couldn't. You know, when I went to Kidderminster, Graham Warner played a 4-3-3 and told me to stay up, you know, we'll get the ball to you, you do your stuff in their half, and you know, it suited me, but there weren't many people around like that then. It was all very functional percentage football, you know, get the ball in behind and squeeze up and long throw-ins and all that sort of stuff, which worked at a certain level. You know, so it's just one of those. It just didn't, you know, I wasn't probably in the right place at the wrong time, should I say.
Okay, so we're going to get Ali Robertson on the podcast soon as well, because, you know, thank you, John, for introducing me to Ali. You just touched upon wingers. Who would your two wingers be? So start with your left winger. Who would that be?
Basically, this sort of hurts a little bit, but I'll say Robbie Dennison, because he kind of replaced me. Graham obviously brought him in from Albion, you know, and Robbie, I honestly think Robbie was the same. He needed confidence, and we're pretty similar in our style of play. I think Robbie's, you know, a very good player, but I also think that Graham Turner backed him because he bought him and gave him the opportunity and stuck with him for a long time. I know they had a bit of a fallout at a certain stage, but you need that little bit of luck, and kind of obviously Robbie produced. He'd got two great feet, you know, so I'd go for Robbie. I mean, Danny Craney was at the club when I joined. Danny got great ability, but again couldn't adjust to lower league football. He couldn't play, you know, in the rough and tumble of the third and fourth divisions, which, you know, not really his fault, just kind of what happened to Wolves in that period. I think when he signed, they're in the top flight, you know, and then things have sort of worked against the club and against him as an individual. But obviously, for consistency, longevity, I'd go for Robbie.
Brilliant.
And he's a great lad as well.
He's a great lad. He's a great lad. Number seven, doesn't matter what number they are, your right winger?
My right winger would be my probably best pal in football, Mickey Holmes.
Yeah.
Because Holmesy could play, he got great skill, but he was also a hard worker, which is part of what you had to be in those days. So he could work up and down the right flank. You know, he'd work hard for the team, but he'd also got ability, could obviously score goals, which he constantly reminds you about. But yeah, I go for Mick, not only because we're good pals, but he did a great job for Wolves at that time. Plus, there isn't anybody else I can really think of.
That's probably the best reason. Andy scored 7 in 7, as we all know, because he doesn't shut up about it.
I know.
And I hope someone beats that. I'm only joking. He's a top lad, Mick. He's absolutely lovely lad. So, your two central midfielders, John?
Right, so not easy, this one, but if I could use the Wolves All-Stars, I'd definitely go for Simon Osborne and Big Shay Olifinjana.
Yeah, but we can't.
Well, you said we could. So if we can't. Okay. Yeah, I'm just saying two of the best players that I played with in a Wolves shirt would be those two. However, as you're talking about people that I played with at Wolves professionally, although what I got paid was like, not really professional, but anyway, it's another story.
What you got paid was amateur.
I go for Andy King.
Yes.
The legend of Everton and several of the clubs. I know he was at Luton, Everton, bloody hell, he had a fair few clubs, Kingy, but what a great player, great touch, vision, could score goals. Excuse me. Could score goals, and yeah, got some good memories of Kingy. God bless him. Nearly everybody I'm mentioning is dead. I hope this is not an omen. Got Bobby Thompson, Mark Kendall, now Andy King. Jesus Christ. It's not the right time to be talking about that, really, is it?
Anyway. Can't edit this. Actually, Andy King, Dean Edwards mentioned Andy as well. He was clearly a very good player, you know, but sometimes they're at the wrong club at the wrong time. Simon Osborne and Shay for the All-Stars, I mean, they're playing now, and I mean, Shay's obviously late 30s, Simon's early 40s, and they are still two absolutely class acts, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. You can obviously see the quality. I will say there's no better time to play football than when you're just becoming a veteran, so between 35 and 40, when you're still fit and you're playing against old fat blokes like me that can't run anymore. And you can basically, you know, you're still fit and run, you still got all your ability. Probably just, you know, not enough to be able to keep playing professionally or even lose the desire to want to, you know, because after 20 years of doing it, it becomes pretty hard work. But yeah, absolutely. Oz is 90 minutes, doesn't he? Shay sort of takes the game by the scruff of the neck, yeah.
Absolute different class. So who would your other central midfielder be partnering Andy King?
Well, I'm a bit split on Keith Downing as a ball winner because I haven't got one in the team. So I would say probably Keith would edge it for me. The other one, which might surprise a few, is Nigel Vaughan.
Okay.
Little Nigel. I mean, he was 8 stone wet through, Vaughan-y. But he got quite a tough little streak about him. He put his foot in. He knew where the goal was. He could score goals, Vaughan. He was up and down the pitch, got great energy and lovely ability. I think he's coaching in America now, Vaughan. I'm pretty sure he is.
Okay.
And done okay for himself. Obviously, Keith's done fantastic, hasn't he? He's involved in the FA. You know, always been a yes man. What can I say?
I hope you're not listening to me, Keith. In fact, I have half the team not listening to this.
That would be all. Yeah, I'll keep my distance.
Right, so you're two centre-forwards, John. Who's going to get your goals?
Right, I've got... it was Andy Mutch.
Yeah.
And now Mutchie was basically came to the club when I was there. Sammy Chapman signed him, and I'm not being disrespectful to Mutchie, and I think you'd accept this, that the improvement that he made from being a semi-professional footballer to training every day and becoming a professional footballer, and I think he got better as the years went on at Wolves. Obviously having a great partnership with Bully, but. It was just unbelievable the way he improved, his first touch, you know, his hold-up play, bringing other people into play. But I'm going to talk about, like you've asked me to, the players that I really played with.
Okay.
So I'm going to give Neil Edwards the number 10 shirt.
I'll scribble out Andy Much then.
Yeah, scribble him out. He talks too much as well for me. Much he like drives me mad. But anyway, Neil was really, really unfortunate. I mean, he came to the club again when we were struggling from Old Swinford in I don't know what league they were in at the time. Did a pre-season with us, and then, you know, he was scoring goals in pre-season. He started scoring goals in the team in the old third division very quickly, and I think he would have gone on and scored an awful lot of goals for Wolves if he wasn't so unlucky to have picked up a really bad knee injury, which he still suffers from now. But Neil was strong as an ox, really, really quick. And in those days, I did play up front with him, probably because we didn't have anybody else. And I would drop into the hole, and then he basically, I'd just look for him to run over the top, a bit like Bully does, or did. Neil was very similar in type as Bully. And I do believe, again, with full-time training, practice every day, it's like anything you do in life, isn't it? If you're doing it every day and you practice, you know, really hard, you're going to improve. And yeah, I think Neil would have gone on to being an exceptional footballer for Wolves, and just, you know, a bit sad that he couldn't really fulfil that potential.
I mean, one of the statistics with Neil Edwards, I think it was in his first 11 games, he scored 7 goals. I mean, that's Steve Paul goal scoring form. And I know he had a very, very bad injury. And if he hadn't had that injury, I think it really is a case for Neil of what might have been.
Definitely, and I'm sure he thinks about it. We all sort of think back about what we should have done and what ifs, and nothing you can do about it, is there? But you know, I just think he would have gone on and scored a lot of goals for the club if we'd have stayed long enough to do that. You know, if you're scoring goals at that level, people are always interested, aren't they? And who knows what might have happened? But I hope he does listen to this and knows that a lot of people thought a lot of him, and you know, it's just a shame that he couldn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely make sure he does listen to it, because Neil is one, once again, we're going to get on the podcast very soon, because he has got a great story. So, John, who is your number 9? Who is that pivotal centre forward who is going to get you the goals alongside Neil Edwards?
Basically no choice, is there? It'd have to be Dean Edwards. No. Okay, so it's got to be Bully. Obviously, nobody needs saying why, really. Just unstoppable. And it's certainly the two seasons I witnessed, you know, the playoff year. He scored, I don't know how many goals that year from when he came, and then the next year he scored 50 odd goals, took us up, won the Sherpa van, all that sort of thing's legendary. He was literally the, and again, I think he improved over the years as well, you know, his all round game improved, but at that time it was just all about scoring goals. And you know, he scored 50 odd in a season. He probably could have got 150, you know, the amount of chances he carved out for himself. And the team sort of being regimented to play the way that suited him, which was get the ball over the top. He'd literally, you know, run his grandmother over to score a goal, and then do it again to get another one. You know, there was no kind of easing off for him. He was just that hungry to score. And it was a privilege to watch him at his best. You know, I went to Oxford the year after, and Brian Horton, who took over as manager, said, "Why can't he be more like Steve Ball?" And I said, "Well, I'm fucking..." Oh, sorry.
Thanks, Brian, for that.
Yeah, I said, I can't be. I said, he can't, you know, he can't be me and I can't be him. Yeah. I can do what I can do. He can do what he can do. Go and sign him if you want him. It was just like, you know, so I wish I had his hunger and his, you know, his desire and all that. But I think that comes from sort of, you know, not being, obviously I had a different upbringing, starting at Arsenal, doing all that. Sure. And I think you probably do lose your hunger a little bit. Whereas Bully came up the sort of other route and grasped it with both hands, and fair play to him.
Yeah, I think he was just an absolute phenomenon. Yeah. One of them.
It's easy for you to say, isn't it?
Yeah, but the thing is with him, he was so strong and he was so direct You know, you can use all the superlatives about him, but he literally was just, like you said, just an unbelievable goal scorer. And I don't think that record, 306 goals, will ever be beaten. He can't ever be beaten. You know, that's 30 odd goals a season, isn't it, pretty much for 10 years. And if you score 30 goals a season now, teams are going to snap you up. He literally...
Yeah, nobody stays that long, do they?
Yeah.
Anywhere. And also, I don't mean to be flippant about it, but I do think there's going to be, if this continues, the money they're getting paying, players will only play for 5 years, 6 years, they'll get the money in the bank and go and do something else.
Yeah.
You know?
If you think about the sort of money Steve would have earned in today's game, I mean, it would have been absolutely frightening, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. You know, it's just different times. And you look at it now, the reruns that are on the telly, the old football and the old pitches, and I do think it was far more entertaining, you know, seeing people getting tackles in, not that I did any, but seeing people, you know, getting tackles in, trying to play on mud baths and pitches with divots, and you know, football was far more attacking based. It wasn't defensive minded, which it's all possession and defence minded now. And
I think that's why, John, it's very, very difficult to compare eras. I mean, and going back to Bulley, there was that goal against Aston Villa. He scored in the League Cup. I think it was just after he'd left, and he goes with a header and he gets knocked out unconscious. Players wouldn't go for that ball anymore, John.
No, but you know, he was especially daft. So,
yeah. So,
or should I say brave?
Oh, unbelievably. Who would be your manager? Preferably one that you haven't fell out with, John.
That's tough.
We stumped him now.
Only on a personal level, I'd have Sammy Chapman, just for his charisma and his humour in the dressing room. You know, you couldn't help but like him and want to play for him. Whereas there's a few others that I can name because I don't really care, but that, you know, you can't like and really didn't want to play for. So Sammy, I'll just tell you a quick story about Sammy. We were playing Walsall all away in the League Cup on a midweek game, so we've gone for our standard pre-match meal of beans on toast somewhere and then a team meeting. So in the team meeting, he says, he's got us all sat in front of him, and he said, I look around this room, he said, and we've got some great players, he said, but there's one, I can't put my finger on it, there's one thing, something missing, I can't put my finger on it. He says, we're like Dolly Parton with one effing tit, there's something missing. That was Sammy. So,
didn't he say something as well about the Heineken League? He was talking about the league. What was that story?
Basically, I think a few of us had been out on either a Tuesday club day or something. He'd had a few calls and a few people say, you know, ratting us about where we were and what we were doing and all that sort of thing. Or it was over a weekend anyway. He came in the morning and stormed into the dressing room and he said, you lot, all I ever hear is, you've been here, you've been Purdy, you've been here, Edwards, you've been here, Holmesy, you up to the, all of us, Digger Barnes. He said, if this was the Heineken League, we'd have got promoted by Christmas.
Absolutely brilliant, John. So, your best 11, in goal Mark Kendall, right back Andy Thompson, left back Dave Digger Barnes, the centre halves, Floyd Street, Ali Robertson, the right winger, Mickey Holmes, left winger, Robbie Dennison, your central midfielders are Andy King and Keith Downing, and your centre forwards, Steve Ball, Neil Edwards, and the manager is Sammy Chapman. Are you pleased with that team?
Yeah, I think it's the best you've had so far.
Oh, definitely. Well, John, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, and hopefully we'll get you on the podcast very soon.
All right, mate. Take care.
Thanks,
cheers.
John. Cheers. Bye now.
Bye. Bye. Bye.